यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरवन चारी यमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम राम हरे हरे जय राधा गोकुल नंद राधा गोकुल नंद राधे जय जय गौरानिताय जय गौरानिताय गौरानिताय जय गौरानिताय। जय जगन्नाथ जय जगन्नाथ बलदेवा जय सुभद्रा। जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद। निताय गौरा हरि बोल हरि बोल हरि बोल। निताय गौरा हरि बोल। श्री श्री राधा गोकुलानंद की जय। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ओम ज्ञान तिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं। वंदेहं श्री गुरु श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्री राधा कृष्ण पादांग सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी निति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे। मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरून् दीनतारिणं। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नाम्ने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो आई वुड लाइक टू वेलकम all of you to this 3-day course on the mystery of consciousness. For those of you who are newly exposed to the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, this may be a very, very important discussion. We have try to present this knowledge from the Bhagavad Gita on scientific basis, because nowadays people are becoming educated in schools and colleges in science and other subjects, and they believe that because they are scientific they should not believe in God, or they should not practice seriously religious or spiritual life. So this presentation is meant for those who are interested to know what is there in the Bhagavad Gita as far as this most important topic of consciousness or chetana is concerned, and the approach is based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who was the founder acharya of our institution, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada was a great pioneer, the greatest spiritual ambassador for India to the whole world, because he has presented our timeless Vedic spiritual knowledge in such a way that modern people with a scientific bent of mind, with scientific education, even many scientists themselves could understand and could relate to. Although Srila Prabhupada was a simple graduate, but still he could talk with the biggest of scientists who were PhDs in various fields of science, and he could challenge them openly in public debate. This was because he understood the principles of the Vedic teachings very, very nicely, very thoroughly. He had understood from the teachings of his own guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And having studied the Vedic scriptures like the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam and so on, he was thoroughly conversant with these teachings and could present them in a very, very logical way, in a way that the people of the modern age could understand. This was his speciality. Many teachers have been there and are there, but they do not teach in a way that the modern person who lacks faith, who lacks understanding, can understand. The modern person is full of doubts, is full of questions. Whenever anything is said about religion or God, immediately he challenges. So this was the atmosphere in which Srila Prabhupada went to America in 1965 at the age of 69, when most people want to live a very comfortable life of retirement in peaceful place without any troubles. But Srila Prabhupada went there with only 35 rupees in his pocket on a free ticket in a steamship. He did not know where he would be staying. He did not know what he would do and where his next meal would come from. At the age of 69, he went and took such a tremendous risk for his personal life. On the way, he had a heart attack twice in the ship. In those days, the journey from India to America was very long. It took him 1 or 2 months, perhaps more, to reach America once he left from Calcutta. And having reached there, he spoke to young boys and girls who were very much disappointed with the way the modern civilization and the society was going. They were looking for gratification elsewhere, in drugs and so many other things. And that was the time when many, many spiritual leaders from India had gone to America, to Europe and so on. Many yogis and babas and so on had become quite famous there. This was the atmosphere and the situation when Srila Prabhupada reached the shores of America. But once he reached there, within a short time, he moved from strength to strength. And very soon, he was talking to Nobel laureates, big, big scientists, and challenging them and trying to make them understand that this Vedic teaching, this philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, was not a matter of blind faith. It was not illogical. Rather, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita were the most logical, most rational,
most sensible. And to understand these teachings was the greatest need of the world. He explained that there was no quarrel he had with science, except that the scientists, they worked and they were more interested in the creation rather than the creator. Srila Prabhupada said this world is created by God. And although it is important for us to understand what is this creation and how it works, it is more important to understand who is God and how He has worked and made everything. And what is the importance for the human beings in this world to try to understand God? What is the relationship the individual being has with God? And Prabhupada explained that this is what our human intelligence is meant for. This is what is a function of consciousness. And therefore, he titled the process as Krishna Consciousness. Because he explained that the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is God. And to be conscious of Him always, or in other words, to be Krishna conscious, is the goal and the perfection of our life. So this movement became known as the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And Srila Prabhupada often remarked that there were two most important words in life. One was Krishna, who is God, and the second is consciousness. There is Krishna, there is God, whether we know it or not, whether we believe it or not, whether we worship Him or not, He exists. He is there. And we must be conscious of Him. So this subject of consciousness is most important. Because we are all conscious beings. We all have consciousness. But now we are using this consciousness for so many other purposes and not for understanding Lord Krishna. So therefore, that is the reason behind the topic of this 3-day course, the mystery of consciousness. So as we go on, we will try to present the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and other such literatures, so that by the end of the 3 days, everybody is thoroughly aware and convinced of what is this consciousness and what it means to be Krishna conscious. So we are going to discuss these topics over 3 days. On the first day, the topic will be, what is consciousness? On the second day, we are going to talk about evolution of consciousness. And on the third day, we will discuss transcendental consciousness. Transcendental, this is a very important word. Transcendental means that which transcends, that which goes beyond. Beyond what? Beyond matter. Beyond material things, into spiritual things. So transcendental consciousness means spiritual consciousness, as opposed to material consciousness. At the present moment, most of the people in the world are absorbed in material consciousness. They are only thinking of material things, of worldly things. They are thinking of money, of enjoyment, of name and fame, of power, of prestige. They are thinking of other people, of other things, of this world. But very few are genuinely aware and conscious of the purpose of life, of God. So slowly we will build up this subject matter of consciousness, which is a mystery to so many people. And eventually, on the third day, we will try to explain the perfection of consciousness. So the first question naturally that arises, the very subject of our talk today, is the mystery of consciousness. That means very few people are aware of what exactly this consciousness is. So let us first define the word consciousness. What exactly does it mean? What is this consciousness? In general, we can understand that consciousness is awareness, to be aware of oneself and of the surroundings. So when we are aware that I am a person, I am with some persons, and I am here in Belgaum, so these are different ways by which we understand that we are conscious. So consciousness at the very basic level means that we are aware of ourselves, we are aware of others, we are aware of situations, we have knowledge, we have understanding. This knowledge or awareness or understanding may be less or may be more. A child's consciousness is there, even though it may not be as evolved or as advanced as the consciousness of an intelligent adult, but nevertheless, the child also has consciousness. Similarly, an animal is also aware of its own surroundings. The animal searches for food. The animal is aware of who is an enemy. The animal also fights for survival, tries to defend itself. The animal also protects its young ones. So even though the consciousness of the animal, like the cat or the dog, may not be as advanced, the cat and dog may not be able to sit here and discuss the subject of consciousness, but they also have consciousness. Even the birds have consciousness. Even the trees have consciousness. Although that consciousness may not be very advanced, but it is there. So to begin with, we understand that the word consciousness means to be aware of oneself and to be aware of one's surroundings. When we say that we are aware of ourselves, we also mean that we have a sense of identity, I-ness, I. That feeling of I, aham, that I exist, I am so and so, and you are so and so. This is such an important concept, such an important phenomenon, that we do not generally think about it. I, who is this I? We always say, I am going here, I am doing this, I am rich, I am poor, I am a student, I am a businessman. So we use this word I all the time, every day. So that sense of I-ness, that awareness that I am a person, I am an individual, that is consciousness. I am conscious of myself. So that I-ness is the consciousness. As you can see in the slide, there is a picture of a famous French philosopher several centuries ago. His name was René Descartes, and he had a very famous statement in which he said, I think, therefore I am. He said, this is only one thing I know for certain. About other things, the knowledge keeps on changing. What a brilliant statement. You see, today, when we look at the school children, we see that textbooks have changed. from the way it was when we were studying in our school in 5th standard, 6th standard. Many of the theories in modern knowledge have changed. So the way people look at the world also changes. Everything is changing. So Descartes was a very intelligent philosopher. So he thought, everything is changing around me. Everything is uncertain. We never know what will happen at the next moment. But one thing is certain. I exist. I think. Why do I exist? What is the proof that I exist? I think, therefore I exist. There are some philosophers who say that we don't exist. The Buddhist philosophy, for example, explains that actually there is nothing in existence. Nothing exists. So that philosophy is called Shunyavad. Vad means philosophy or argument, and Shunya means zero. So that philosophy is that everything is zero. Nothing exists. Neither you exist, nor I exist, nor God exists, nor this world exists. Nothing exists. So our idea that something exists is an illusion. It is called Maya. That is what they say. That everything is illusion, nothing exists. But René Descartes is saying, no, I exist. The proof for that is that I think. I am thinking that this existence is an illusion or not an illusion. That very fact of thinking shows that existence is a reality, that I do exist. So therefore, Descartes is saying that the proof of consciousness, or the proof that I exist, is that I think. So consciousness is a reality that cannot be denied. So therefore it has become, even in the modern days, a very, very important subject of study. In the olden days, people had faith in the scriptures. So whatever the Vedas, the Bhagavad Gita, the Puranas, the Upanishads, they said, the people believed it. And therefore their life was very successful. But nowadays, since we doubt everything, it is hard for us to come to any conclusion or any certain knowledge. Everywhere there is doubt. It may be like this, it may not be like this. Everybody comes up with his or her own theory about something. And so we don't really know what is exactly the truth. So scientists are also appreciating now that this consciousness is something very important. And we should study it. Because modern science has not been able to explain what is this consciousness. This sense of I, who is this I? Where is it coming from? What is the source? What is the origin of this consciousness? They are not clear. So biologists are studying it, physicists are studying it, chemists are studying it, philosophers are studying it, people who study computer science and artificial intelligence, they are studying it. Each is trying to analyze this subject according to his own field, according to his own knowledge. But still, there is no clear understanding. Today there are many magazines all over the world, in the world of science, that are simply devoted to consciousness. There are departments in universities devoted only to consciousness studies. There are many conferences, seminars organized for scientists all over the world, to which many of the devotees from ISKCON also go sometimes. And big Nobel Prize winners, they are there and all are talking about consciousness. What is this consciousness? So we should not take this subject lightly, thinking, oh, it is just another, what is there? What is there to talk about in consciousness? If there was nothing to talk about, these big, big scientists, they would not have had so many conferences, written so many journals and books on this topic. But unfortunately, because the method for understanding knowledge or reality that the scientists are using is defective, so they are not able to come to any certain conclusion about what exactly this consciousness is all about. So therefore, a lot of confusions exist in the modern scientific world about consciousness. By and large, there are many scientists who say that consciousness or life or that sense that I am here, I exist, it arises somewhere in the brain. And by different types of research, they try to establish in which part of the brain this consciousness is coming from. Somebody says it comes from the midbrain, somebody says it comes from the neurocortex, in different parts of the brain. But still it is not clear. So there is much misunderstanding. Modern day scientists, philosophers and so on do not have a clear idea of terms like consciousness, mind, intelligence, brain even. Although the brain is a physical object, there are medical doctors who specialize in the brain, but still the understanding of the subtler aspects of how we think, of how we feel, of how we analyze something, of how our mind and intelligence works, of emotions, these things are very unclear. What exactly is the mind? Science does not know. What exactly is the intelligence? Science does not know. We know that mind exists because we can feel. We know that intelligence exists because we can discriminate, we can understand many, many things. But what is mind? What is intelligence? And what is the connection of the mind and intelligence with the brain, the physical organ that we have inside the skull? All these points are subjects of great debate and confusion in the modern world. And so much so that many, many scientists in the last century, in the early part of the last century and also later in the 20th century, they have tried to study this subject with their own deep intelligence. And they have come to the conclusion that this consciousness that they are trying to understand is something that is beyond their regular subject of physics, chemistry, mathematics and so on. So here is a famous physicist, Niels Bohr, who won a Nobel Prize. His son also won a Nobel Prize. Very, very famous personality. Every school student has perhaps heard of Niels Bohr. So what does he say? It may sound a little complicated, but it is not. It is very simple. What Bohr says, we can admittedly find nothing in physics or chemistry that has even a remote bearing on consciousness. In other words, what he is saying is that we cannot understand what is this consciousness by our physics and chemistry. We cannot do this. We cannot understand. Then he goes on to say, yet all of us know that there is such a thing as consciousness, simply because we have it ourselves. Again, just see how simply and wonderfully he is putting it. Yes, physics, chemistry, mathematics cannot understand this consciousness, but because of that, it doesn't mean that consciousness does not exist. It exists. And what is the proof that it exists? Because we have it ourselves. Then he goes on, hence consciousness must be a part of nature, or more generally of reality, which means that quite apart from the laws of physics and chemistry as laid down in quantum theory, we must also consider laws of quite a different nature. The essence of what Niels Bohr is saying here is that because consciousness is a reality that cannot be understood by modern science, by physics, chemistry, mathematics and so on, therefore the laws which apply to consciousness must also be different. Then we must look elsewhere. Modern science cannot give us the answer of consciousness. So the effect of what Niels Bohr is saying is that we have to look elsewhere to find an answer to what is this consciousness. Niels Bohr also admits that science will not be able to give us an answer to this very important question. Another famous scientist, Michael Polanyi, has said, "Once it is recognized on other grounds that life transcends physics and chemistry, there is no reason for suspending recognition of the obvious fact that consciousness is a principle that fundamentally transcends not only physics and chemistry, but also the mechanistic principles of living being." I will explain this in very simple language. What he is saying again is that there is something that is beyond our physics and chemistry, something beyond our science, and that is consciousness. And therefore this consciousness is something beyond how we explain life. Mechanistic principles of living being means that in the modern science, life is explained in terms of atoms and molecules. A scientist will say, what is life? Life is simply the workings of atoms and molecules and chemicals in the body. When there are some chemicals that move in the brain in a certain way, some signals are generated. So that is love, hate, everything is because of chemicals, because of atoms. But what this scientist is saying here is that this mechanistic principle of life is not the true explanation. Consciousness is something that goes beyond it. Another famous scientist, he said, "It seems to me pretty plain that there is a third thing in the universe, to wit, consciousness, which I cannot see to be matter or force or any conceivable combination of either." The word combination is not here. So in other words, what this scientist is saying is that science is studying matter and science is studying energy or force, but this consciousness is something that is neither matter, it is neither energy, there is something different about this consciousness. So we can see that very intelligent scientists who have been thinking very deeply on these matters, they come to this conclusion that this consciousness, this sense of I-ness, this I, is something different from matter and energy that physics, chemistry, biology that they study. There is something unique. And this other scientist, Eugene Wigner, who is also a Nobel Prize winner in the last century, he said, a very important quote, just see how these scientists, some of them are so brilliant, but because they don't have a genuine guru, therefore they are almost there, near the truth, just one atom away from the truth. But because they don't have a genuine guru, they are not able to reach or understand this truth. So just see his realizations. Eugene Wigner says, there are two kinds of reality or existence. The existence of my consciousness and the reality or existence of everything else. So what is he saying? He is saying there are two realities in life. One is my consciousness, that is I, the sense of I-ness. And the second is everything else. That is a second reality. So therefore scientists like this, who have been very brilliant award-winning scientists, have expressed their doubts, their feelings, that modern science is not able to explain consciousness. Many people think that modern science has understood consciousness or is explaining life, but it is not. So let us now undertake a logical analysis to show that the source of consciousness is not based on the body. It is not based on chemicals. It is not based on matter. It is not something that can be analyzed by physics, chemistry, mathematics, biology, and so on. It is something quite different. And we will show this by logical analysis. This was again one of the very important contributions of Srila Prabhupada, that he established the teachings of the Vedas on a sound logical footing, to show people that do not think that these teachings are illogical. Do not think that only science is logical. Many times he told the scientists, make your science so perfect that it can understand consciousness and the source of the consciousness, that is God, the Supreme Consciousness. And he said, they do not think that simply because science says something, it is logical. There are many illogical things in science also. Similarly, do not think that religion is illogical simply because you do not understand it. So there is great logic, great science behind the spiritual beliefs. So let us try to one by one understand the logic behind believing that consciousness actually comes from something beyond body, beyond matter, and which cannot be analyzed by science. Modern science says that we are bundles of chemicals which have aligned together by chance and are exhibiting various feelings and emotions. We are sometimes happy, we are sometimes shocked, we are in great grief, and sometimes we express love, we express so many emotions, we undergo so many emotions. But if you ask modern science says these emotions are nothing but the movement of chemicals and atoms and molecules in the brain and in the nervous system. Is this all that we are? Is this all that our feelings and our emotions are? Can it be explained away so easily, so simply? It is not a very logical explanation. Can one logically explain love? What is this feeling called love? Or what is this feeling called hate? Or what is this feeling called greed? Or what is this feeling called anger? What is this feeling called pride? Can we explain all these things in scientific terms? Why does somebody feel proud or angry or greedy? No, we cannot satisfactorily explain these things simply in terms of chemicals and molecules. So is life no more than molecular collision and chemical interaction? It's all a matter of chance. By this philosophy, anybody can go to the court when he's arrested for murder and say, I'm not responsible, everything happened by chance. Because by chance, certain chemicals and molecules have moved in my brain, and therefore I have committed these actions, and therefore I am not responsible for it. It is all the chemicals and molecules that are responsible for it. Is the love that you feel for your parents simply some chemical secretion? Mechanistic science has no correct understanding of the emotions we feel. They simply speculate that all this is caused by atoms and molecules. But atoms and molecules, chemicals, and in fact the whole body, it is simply matter. Is matter conscious? Does matter have desires? You are sitting on some chairs, you have some desires, you are hearing this talk and seeing the pictures on the screen. Is the chair also experiencing anything? The chair that you are sitting on? Is the chair having feelings? That I wish this person had sat on me instead of that other person? No. Does the chair possess feelings? Does matter possess feelings? No. Matter does not possess feelings. Matter does not have the inherent quality to think, to feel, to will. These are properties of consciousness. Matter by itself cannot do these things. Therefore, let us understand things. From a scientific point of view again, let us take the words of a famous scientist, Sir Roger Penrose, a very famous physicist. He says, even to understand something which has no consciousness, you require consciousness. If you are a computer which has no consciousness, in my view, you also do not have the understanding. Computers can do wonderful things. You can make them play chess very well and so on. But the understanding comes from the person who programmed the machine. A machine by itself does not have the quality. So, this scientist has understood that even if a machine appears to act in a very intelligent way, we cannot say that the machine is conscious, and therefore we can say that matter is not conscious. Look at the picture on the top left-hand corner of the screen, which shows a distant sunset taking place, and there is a machine that records the light of the sunset. It is a machine which has a certain cell that receives the light and is able to understand the color of the light. And then it gives a printout that says, "I see red light." Now imagine that you are sitting next to the machine and looking at this sunset. Of course, as we know, sunrise and sunset, these are two very beautiful experiences for human beings. In many, many hill stations and even on the sea beach, people, they come there early in the morning or in the evening time, especially to see the sunrise or to see the sunset, because it is such a beautiful experience. So when you see the different colors on the horizon, you see the different colors that the sun is taking place, that is, looking in, or sun is appearing in, you feel some happiness. You feel some pleasure. That pleasure or that happiness is not something that can be explained by atoms and molecules. So you say when you see the sunlight, "I see red light." And the machine is saying the same thing, "I see red light." So is the machine the same as you? Is the machine experiencing the beauty of the sunset? Is the machine experiencing the happiness that you are experiencing when you are seeing the sunset? Is the machine experiencing the color red? It is not. The machine has no feelings. It may seem to be very intelligent because it is understanding what is red and what is white, but still it is not conscious because it has no feelings, it has no emotions, it cannot understand the experience of the sunset. It can only give data. Some days ago, there was a report. Now you can look at the picture on the top right hand side of the screen. What do you see there? You see a robot. What is a robot? A robot is a machine that is programmed. It is a supercomputer, very, very high level advanced computer. And that has lots of parts and mechanical elements. And by programming in certain ways and giving certain instructions to the machine, it can move. So nowadays there are robots that can move, that can walk, that can lift objects. There are robots that are also used for many, many assembly operations in a manufacturing company. Sometimes when it is dangerous for a human being to be there, they send a robot inside. The robot can do so many functions. It can lift an object and keep it there. The robot can respond to certain instruction. When the instruction is given, you drop this box, the robot will drop the box. And the instruction is given, pick up this box, the robot will pick up the box. So in this way the robot can perform many functions. This is called artificial intelligence. There was a report some days ago, and there was a picture, I think somewhere in some newspaper or a magazine, about a robot doing arati of Lord Balaji of Tirupati. So there was a photo or a deity of Balaji, Lord Venkateshwar, and this robot was in front and was doing the arati exactly as a pujari does. And he did in the right sequence. He lifted the agarbatti, he lit it, then he offered it, he moved the agarbatti in a certain way, then he took the next item and he offered that. So it was completely programmed in such a way that the machine or the robot could do the whole arati. Now the question is, was a robot doing bhakti? Was the robot aware of what he was doing? Did the robot have the feeling of devotion when he was performing the arati to Lord Balaji? Was he experiencing the arati? No. The robot is simply a machine that was programmed to do certain actions. But the difference between the robot doing the arati of Lord Balaji and an actual pujari or a devotee doing the arati is, the devotee performs the arati with feeling, with emotion, with some understanding, whereas a robot just does it blindly. There is no feeling, there is no experience. So we can understand that even if machines become very sophisticated and they imitate the actions of human beings, we should not think that they have become conscious, because consciousness cannot come from matter. Again, take another example. There is a camera that is recording a particular situation, let us say a drama or a video camera. And when the judges or the audience, they are watching the drama, they feel many things. Sometimes they feel sorrow when there is a sorrowful scene being enacted. Sometimes when there is a comedy scene, they start laughing. Sometimes when there is a tense scene, they also feel very tense. They club their fingers together. So in this way, the viewer of the drama also goes through all the emotions and the experience of the drama. A video camera will capture also all the information that is there in the drama. The video camera will do a better job of capturing the information. Even 10 years later, the video camera will be able to tell you, or the video disc will be able to tell you exactly what happened in the duration of the whole drama. That the individual may forget many things, but does that mean that the video camera is superior to the individual who has seen the drama? What is the difference? The difference is that the individual viewer of the drama could actually experience the drama. He could feel the drama. The video camera was only capturing the information, the data, but the video camera is not conscious. So let us take some logical arguments to understand how we are not this body. When a person dies, we say he has passed away. But who has passed away? The body of the loved one is still there. So actually, it is a soul that has passed away. We will come to this point later. There is something that has passed away. The body is still there. The chemicals are still there. if life is coming from the brain, if consciousness is coming from the brain is still there in the dead body, why can we not repair the brain to make the dead person come alive? If the consciousness is in the whole nervous system is very much there, the nerves are there. If somebody says, well, the consciousness is because of the chemicals are also there in the body. If necessary, you may add those chemicals. Modern science has understood what chemicals are generated in the brain. So all you need to do is to inject those chemicals in a certain way and life should come back, but it does not happen. So why is it that despite the fact that the brain is there, the organs are there, the chemicals are there in the dead body, but the dead body cannot be brought back to life? That means that consciousness or life itself does not originate in the brain or in any of the organs of the body or in the chemicals that are in the body. So consciousness is not there in the dead body. So the difference between the dead body and the living body is that in the living body there is consciousness. In the dead body there is no consciousness. In other words, consciousness is not simply a matter of awareness of oneself and one's surroundings. Consciousness is not simply the sense of identity of myself, that sense of I-ness, but consciousness is life itself. Consciousness is life and life is consciousness. So when we say now this person has passed away, it means that there is something there that has passed away, that is not connected to the body, that is not produced from the chemicals or the organs of the body. Otherwise, why is it that the person was alive before and is not alive now? Similarly, nowadays there has been a lot of research done into what are called near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. A near-death experience is a very extraordinary experience that some people have when they are very, very close to the point of death. Sometimes they may die, in which case we cannot understand whether he had such an experience. But there are some people who almost die, a very, very serious accident or perhaps a very major heart attack, almost on the verge of death, but somehow he doesn't die, remains alive with either medical help or for some reason. And some of these people, they experience some extraordinary things which cannot be explained by science. I remember one lady who was a doctor and she was working in a government hospital in Bombay. She was also a devotee of ISKCON and she was doing her super specialization. That means not MBBS, not MS, but after that. And she was specializing in heart surgery, cardiothoracic surgery. And one lady from Maharashtra, who was from a village, she was admitted for a open heart bypass surgery. This lady was illiterate and she only knew her particular native language. This was the first time she had come to a big hospital and certainly she had never ever seen an operation theater in her life. She had never seen these instruments. She didn't have any idea what these things were. And as you know, because a bypass surgery is a very major surgery, So one is given general anesthesia, so the patient becomes completely unconscious, and the patient is not supposed to be aware of what is happening in the surroundings. Even though a very major operation takes place, the patient doesn't feel any pain, the patient doesn't understand what is being done to him or her. But in this case, after the operation was over, this lady, the patient, told this doctor lady her experience. She said how many people were there in the room at the time of the operation. She described it very clearly. She described some of the events that were happening in the operation theater, even as the operation was going on, and when her chest had been opened up and the open heart surgery was actually going on. And after the operation was over, she was explaining the things that she saw from the top, as if she was on the top. So here in this picture, you see a painting of a similar situation where the person is seeing himself being operated on the operating table. The body is there on the operating table, but he is seeing himself being operated. So this was a similar situation that this village lady experienced. This devotee lady doctor, she was extremely shocked. She didn't know what to say. And she tried to ask many questions to this lady, the patient. And she came to the conclusion that there was no possible explanation, scientifically speaking, of how this lady could have understood or seen whatever she said that she saw. She probed in many different ways to make sure that this lady was not just simply guessing or bluffing, but she spoke everything accurately. Whatever she asked some very simple questions, of course, not technical questions, but whatever simple questions she asked about what was existing in the room, this lady correctly answered. When the patient was wheeled into the room itself, into the actual operation theater from the side room, perhaps she was already partly unconscious. And during the operation, certainly she was completely unconscious from a medical point of view. But how is it that she knew what was going on when she was deeply in that unconscious state? So when this Delhi doctor went to her head of the department in a state of excitement, and she wanted some investigation done, immediately the head of the department became very much afraid and said, no, 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 and she hushed up the whole thing. So the head of the department did not want any such investigation or any such research. So the whole matter was closed there and then. And this lady doctor was quite dissatisfied, but she could not do anything because she had not completed her super specialization degree. So we understand that there are some things that even in modern science people do not want to face. The evidence is there. It needs to be researched. It needs to be looked into and examined carefully. But many times science deliberately does not examine those pieces of information which are very, very puzzling like this. Scientists may try to explain this by all kinds of other explanations like subconscious memory and so on. But you cannot explain why a person is actually seeing something and able to explain when her physical eyes are closed. There are many, many such experiences people have. There have been many books published in the market. Some of them, of course, are not to be relied upon, but some of them are very genuine. One such eminent personality who conducted a lot of research into near-death experiences and out-of-the-body experiences was a doctor called Dr. Michael Sabom in America. Initially, he was very skeptical. He thought, how is this possible? How can you view your own operation from the top or from anywhere else? But he started conducting research. Because he himself was a surgeon, so he came across several patients who actually started talking about their seeing their own bodies being operated. Very carefully, he started interviewing them, asking them many, many detailed questions. And after many, many years of research, he got convinced that consciousness is something that is different from the body. And he wrote that in his book. He concluded in a very cautious way. He said it clearly, but very cautiously. He could not speak so openly because tomorrow the scientific community would say, would criticize him, and they would say that he was not scientific. Perhaps his career would have been affected. Perhaps he would not be accepted in the scientific community. But nevertheless, he could not speak an untruth, so he gave the results of his findings, but presented in a very cautious way. But his conclusion was very clear, that he now understood that this consciousness is something separate from the body. Otherwise, how is it that the person is seeing his own body being operated? Who is it that is seeing his own body being operated? So these are important points for all of us to consider. When we speak of my body, even logically we can understand that we don't say I body. I body is paining. No. We say my body is paining. Just as we say, I lost my bag. That means my bag and me are two separate things. I don't say I bag lost. We say my bag is lost, to show that the bag is an object that is different from me, and I own the bag, and I lost that bag. Similarly, even in everyday talk, we always say, my hand is paining, not I hand paining. My head, my hand, my stomach. So who is that I, to whom this head, stomach, body belongs? So logically we can understand that there is something quite different from the body. So these are all different logical ways. And here, from the near-death experience and the out-of-body experience, we have empirical evidence. It is called out-of-the-body experience because there is something that is going out of the body. And it is viewing itself, it is viewing its own body. So sometimes these things are also called OBE, or out of the body experience. Similarly, some very important research has been done into past life memories called reincarnation. One doctor called Dr. Ian Stevenson in America, he dedicated practically his whole life to doing this research. He was a psychiatrist. Just about a year ago, I heard that he had passed away. So for most of his career, for more than 40, 50 years, he did research on this one topic, past life memories. These are examples of people who remembered what they were in their previous life. Now generally, in the layman's talking, or in the ordinary press, the media and so on, there may be such discussions, but scientists would never take it seriously. They only felt it was some sentimental, emotional outpourings of somebody. And there was no scientific reality in all of this. But Dr. Ian Stevenson was a scientist, a very qualified person, and he did research for 50 years. He wrote many books. He published many papers. Till today, despite the overwhelming evidence that Dr. Ian Stevenson presented, much of the scientific community still does not accept. His most famous book is 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation. He adopted a very scientific approach, a very methodical approach to eliminate any possibility of cheating or fraud, because after all, anybody can say, I was such and such in the previous life. But what is the proof? What is the guarantee? So for this purpose, in order to eliminate such cheating, he took lot of precautions. Perhaps there were many cases that he dismissed as being fraud. But there were also many, many cases that he established as being genuine cases. And he spent a long time with a whole team of researchers examining all the evidence, taking all the interviews, and being a trained psychiatrist and psychologist himself, he used all his skills to try to see that only the truth was established. One such famous case was that of a lady called Minu, actually a child called Minu, whose picture you see here on the screen. This child would always, from a certain age, she was only about maybe 4 or 5 years old at the time when Dr. Ian Stevenson met her in India. Of course, Dr. Ian Stevenson has researched cases not only in India, but in all parts of the world, in America, in Europe, in Middle East, many, many places, and he has come up with the same answers. So in this case, this little girl, she always talked as if she was somebody else. She said that her name was Mana, and she talked about her husband, she talked about her child. Actually, her name was not Minu, but she said that in her previous life, she had a daughter called Minu. And then she explained all the details. And she used to keep talking. For some time, the parents and the others thought this was just the babbling of a child. And nobody took it seriously. But gradually, as she kept on talking, as the months went by, and she started giving many, many details, and she would be completely absorbed in the mood or the consciousness of that mother, of that lady, and she would talk about her daughter, about her husband's brothers. And finally the parents started thinking that yes, she is probably thinking of her previous life. Usually, Dr. Ian Stevenson found that it was children who most tended to remember the previous lives. When the children grew into adults, they further lost their memory. But for children, some of these memories were very, very strong. So Dr. Ian Stevenson heard about this case. He came there with his team. He inquired. He found that this girl mentioned the name of the village where she lived in her previous life, all the details. Dr. Ian Stevenson took this girl hundreds and thousands of kilometers away to this new village. Very correctly, this little girl identified her house in that village. She was completely familiar with all the streets in the village, in that small town, Bhatpara. And she went right up to the house, and then in the house, she recognized who was her former husband, who was her former daughter, and her former husband's brothers and all the relatives in the house, and what are the things in the house and what was where in the house. She could recognize all these things very, very correctly. The facts were verified that in that house, a lady called Mana had died in her young age, after she had borne a child of a few years old. For some reason she had died. So that fact was also corroborated. And so it was established by Dr. Ian Stevenson that this girl was actually this lady in her former life. Similarly, there was another case that was researched by Dr. Ian Stevenson. This lady was a college lecturer in Nagpur, and she started speaking a certain dialect of Bengali, but it was not the Bengali that was spoken by everybody. There was some Bengali community in Nagpur, and they identified that this was a certain kind of Bengali spoken in a certain kind of place within Bengal. And then, finally, Ian Stevenson went all the way there. He did research in those villages. The lady was taken there. She had given all the details correctly. The village records were checked in the taluka office about all the death details and everything, the birth and death details, all the details, the family details, the house details were absolutely 100% correct. She was able to pinpoint and recognize all the people, although they had possibly grown much older. Ian Stevenson also recorded one American lady in America who started speaking in a very strange language, which with much difficulty and calling in many linguistic experts, they understood as being the language of Sweden in Europe, but not the modern Swedish language. It was a Swedish language spoken a couple of centuries ago. And this lady was feeling that she was a Swedish farmer in her previous life. And she had very, very clear memory of her previous life. He even interviewed one boy in Lebanon who was from a Muslim family. This lady in America was from a Christian family. And this boy in Lebanon was from a Muslim family. And similar details came up. So Dr. Ian Stevenson wrote many, many books and papers like this, and he concluded that even though there were many cases that he saw in India amongst Hindus, but there were also some non-Hindu families in India, but he could understand that Hindus, Buddhists, Jains and so on, they accept the principle of reincarnation. But he also found examples of people who remembered their previous life, even though they were born in communities or in families that followed a religion that did not accept reincarnation. Muslims, Christians, for example, do not believe in the previous life and the next life. But these members who were interviewed, they actually remembered very clearly who they were, where they were, and so on. So this means, Ian Stevenson concluded, that reincarnation is not a matter of religious belief. It is a matter of fact. It is a law of nature. It doesn't matter what religion you belong to. It doesn't matter what nationality you belong to, what caste, creed, community you belong to. It is a law of nature. Just as whether we are Indians or Russians or Americans, it doesn't matter. If we put our finger in the fire, we will be burnt. So similarly, this was a law of nature. So Ian Stevenson also concluded that there is something very extraordinary here. When a person dies, in whichever religious community he belongs to, the body is eventually destroyed, is it not? Hindus cremate the body, they burn the body. The Muslims and the Christians, they bury the body. So when the body is burnt, within a few hours, it is destroyed. Every aspect of the body is destroyed. When the body is buried, then also, after perhaps a certain period of time, the entire body is eaten up by worms and other insects inside the earth, and the body becomes converted into dust. So what remains of the body? Nothing remains of the body. Whichever be our religious faith, the body is completely destroyed. So then, here is the question. If the body is completely destroyed, even if you don't do anything and simply leave the body somewhere, it will decompose, it will become dust. So what is it, or who is it, and how is it that this child or this person is remembering something that happened in the previous life? When the previous body was completely destroyed? What is that connecting link? Surely then, there must be something that was there in the previous life, in the previous body, that was not destroyed when the body was destroyed, and that is still existing even now in the new life, in the new body. That is the only explanation of how somebody can remember the previous life. So this is again some empirical evidence for how the source of consciousness or awareness or life itself is not created by the body or by chemicals, but it is something separate from the body and it is something superior to the body. So let us hear now what the Bhagavad Gita says on this topic. There are some little mistakes here because the particular font to bring Devanagari script could not be properly done in time. But Krishna says here, Yatha prakash yatyekam kritsnam lokam imam ravi kshetri kshetre tatha kritsnam prakashayati bharata. Krishna says, O son of Bharat, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So Lord Krishna now in the Bhagavad Gita talks about the soul or the Atma being the source of consciousness. The Atma being the source of life. The Atma itself is life. And just as the sun is located at one point in space, but it radiates its light and heat everywhere. Similarly, the soul is located at one point in the body, but it radiates its energy, it radiates its symptom, which is the consciousness, all through the body. So according to the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, consciousness exists in the body because of the presence of the soul. So His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada explains in His very clear words about consciousness and its source. So you can read part of His teachings. He says here, there are various theories regarding consciousness. Here in Bhagavad Gita, the example of the sun and sunshine is given. As the sun is situated in one place, but is illuminating the whole universe, so a small particle of spirit soul, although situated in the heart in this body, is illuminating the whole body by consciousness. Thus consciousness is a proof of the presence of the soul, as sunshine or light is the proof of the presence of the sun. When the soul is present in the body, there is consciousness all over the body. And as soon as the soul has passed from the body, there is no more consciousness. This can be easily understood by any intelligent man. Therefore, consciousness is not a product of the combinations of matter. It is a symptom of the living entity. So such a simple example, the sun and sunshine. The sun is located in one place physically, but its presence can be felt throughout the universe by the presence of sunshine. So even though we may not be able to directly see the sun, Simply by seeing sunshine outside our window, we can understand that the sun is present. So you need not physically see the sun to understand the presence of the sun. Simply by seeing the symptom of the sun, which is the sunshine, one can understand that the sun exists. Similarly, although one may not be able to see the soul, one can understand that the soul is present in the body because the symptom of the soul, that is consciousness, is present in the body. Even though we do not see it, but the proof of the existence of the soul is the existence of consciousness. So what are the properties of this soul as described in Bhagavad Gita? For those of you who would like to know more in detail, you can pick up a copy of the Bhagavad Gita which is available here in our temple, and you can read many, many wonderful things about the soul. But I will try to be only very brief here. Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that the soul is indestructible. It is not destroyed when the body is destroyed. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So this soul remains even after death. The soul has individuality. The soul is an individual. So you are a distinct individual soul. I am a distinct individual soul. And the soul is occupying the body. The soul is within the body. Just as the driver is within a car. The car is moving only because of the presence of the driver. Similarly, the body is moving, thinking, feeling, talking, etc. only because of the presence of the soul within the body. Even though the car may be excellent, if the driver is not there, the car will not move. Similarly, even though all the organs and chemicals may be there in the body, but if the soul is not present, then the body will not function. Then we say that the body is dead. So the soul also has its form. The soul has its personality. But this form of the soul is in seed form now. The soul changes bodies one after the other. When this body is destroyed, it goes to another body. Then it leaves that body and goes to yet another body. But the soul remains even though different bodies are destroyed. And what is the size of the soul? The Upanishads declare that the soul is very, very tiny. It is a particle of spiritual energy. It is the size of 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. You can make that experiment. I cannot do that, but you can do. So, you can take a hair from your head, take the tip of the hair, divide it into 1,000 parts, and take one such part and divide it again into 1,000 parts. So that is the size of the soul. In other words, what Lord Krishna wants to say in Bhagavad Gita is that the soul is very, very tiny, microscopic, but still it is amazing, inconceivable, because such a tiny soul is able to not only power the body of a small germ or a small insect, but even the body of a human being, or the body of a powerful lion, or a powerful elephant, or a whale. Even the huge body of an elephant is powered by just this tiny soul, which is 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. So this is how the soul is extremely amazing. And the scriptures also tell us that the soul is situated in the region of the heart. And from there the consciousness spreads through the body, through the medium of the blood. The soul is also called Satchidananda. The soul is eternal, Sat. It is full of knowledge, that is Chit. And it is full of happiness, full of bliss, that is Ananda. So these are some of the properties of the soul in brief. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes that there are two kinds of substances or energies in this world. One is called the material energy or matter, which includes the physical energy. And the other is spiritual energy, spirit. There is matter and there is spirit. Lord Krishna says, Bhumi rapanalavayu kam mano buddharevacha ahankara iti yamme bhinna prakritir ashtadha. He says there are eight elements in this material energy. And in them five are called the gross elements and three are called the subtle elements. In the gross elements, there is earth, which is not mentioned here. Earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Bhumi, apa, anala, vayuhu, and kham. So earth means solids. Water means liquids. Air means gaseous substances. Fire means heat and radiation. And kham or ether means space. So these are the five gross elements of which matter is composed. But there are also three subtle elements called mind, intelligence, and false ego. So therefore, in accordance with this, we can understand that we have two kinds of bodies. The gross body, made up of these five gross elements, and we have the subtle body, which is made up of these three subtle elements. But apart from this, there is a spiritual entity. There is the soul or the Atma, which has nothing to do with this inferior material energy. So in this world, the soul is covered by the gross and subtle coverings of the body. There is the gross body and there is the subtle body. The gross body consists of the earth, water, fire, air and ether, as we can see. But there is also a subtle body which consists of the mind, intelligence and the false ego. And the soul is covered by this subtle and gross body. What you can feel with your hands, your flesh, your bones, and so on, and the physical organs like the brain, the stomach, intestines, all these are part of the gross body. And the mind, intelligence, and the false ego, these are very subtle. They cannot be felt with the hand. They cannot be heard. They cannot be tasted. But we can understand by their symptoms that they exist. But the soul is beyond this gross body and the subtle body. So the scriptures explain the body-soul combination as being like a chariot. In the chariot, you can see there are horses, there are reins, there is a driver, there is a chariot, and there is a passenger. So according to the Upanishads, the horses represent the five senses. The reins represents the mind. The driver represents the intelligence. The chariot represents the gross body. And the passenger represents the soul. when the intelligence is very strong and pure, it controls the mind. Just as a good driver or a good charioteer will control the reins of the horses, like a good driver of a car controls the steering wheel of a car very nicely. But a person who is drunk cannot control the steering wheel nicely. So a nice charioteer, a strong charioteer, will be able to control the horses, which means the senses, through the mind. In other words, a strong intelligence is able to control the mind, and through the mind, the intelligence can control the senses. If the horses are not controlled because the driver is weak and he is not holding the reins properly, then what will happen? The horses will start going in different directions, and who will suffer at the end of it? The poor passenger. However, when the driver listens to the instructions of the passenger nicely and he goes according to where the passenger wants to go, then by following these instructions he will hold the reins properly, direct the horses properly. In the same way, when the intelligence is weak spiritually, it cannot control the mind. The mind is then obliged to follow the dictates of the senses. The senses make unlimited demands, and the mind urges the intelligence to try to fulfill those demands. And our intelligence then, instead of being used for some spiritual purpose, is used simply for satisfying the unlimited urges and desires of the senses. So therefore, for the body-soul combination, this is not a very good thing. However, when the intelligence becomes spiritualized by hearing from the scriptures and by associating with spiritually minded people, then everything becomes nice. The chariot of the body moves in a very, very nice way towards its ultimate destination of self-realization and real happiness. So this example is very important. We will be circulating notes to all of you who have registered. So even if you are not able to keep up with the pace of the discussion, do not worry. You will have these notes. You can take these notes to your home, read them carefully, and then you will be able to appreciate more all the topics that we have discussed today. So here in this diagram you see the representation of how the soul represents the passenger and so on. And now we will come to how in our current situation there are three states of consciousness. This consciousness is there in our body. There is Jagrati, there is Swapna, and there is Sushupti. This is a spelling mistake here. It is Sushupti. Sushupti means deep sleep. So in Jagrati, and I hope everybody in the audience is in this state of consciousness at this time. In the state of Jagrati, one is awake, one is conscious of not only oneself, but one is conscious of the surroundings also. In this state, the gross body is also active, and the subtle body is also active. Gross body is active because we are moving our hands, our fingers, our body, when we walk, when we sit, or run, jump. When we are awake, the gross body is active. At the same time, the subtle body, that is the mind and intelligence, is also active. As I speak, you are hearing, your mind is active, hearing what I am saying. Your eyes are focused on the screen. You are absorbing what you are seeing. Your mind is also absorbing it. Your intelligence is analyzing it. You are coming to some conclusion. So in the state of Jagruti, the gross body as well as the subtle body, both are active. Then, when we try to go to sleep, the first stage that we pass through is called Swapna, when we start seeing dreams. In this state, the gross body is not active, because the body is lying on the bed. But the subtle body is active. In a dream, we may think so many things. In the dream state, the mind is very, very active. Sometimes we think, I'm a king, or a tiger is chasing me. And we may be so much active in the dream. As a king, I will be giving orders to everybody. Kill this person, reward that person. So the mind is hyperactive in the dream, but the body is lying as it is. So in the dream state, the subtle body is active, but the gross body is inactive. Sometimes, however, even in the state of swapna or dreams, the gross body may suddenly become active. In your dream, if you are thinking that the tiger is coming to eat me, suddenly you may shout in fear. So even though you are shouting in your dream, but the subtle body has such an impact on the gross body that you actually start shouting. So somebody sleeping next to you will also get afraid, thinking, what has happened? Why is this person shouting? There are people who talk in their sleep, and there are also some people who walk in their sleep. I used to know such a person who actually walks when he's sleeping, and he does not collide into any object. He knows perfectly where he is going, but he's still asleep. Even though eyes are open, but he is asleep. He's walking, he's moving, but his state of consciousness is swapna. So he is not situated in the world of the external surroundings. He is situated in his own world of dreams. He is dreaming something. So, sometimes in swapna, the gross body is also active. But generally, it is only the subtle body that is active. And in the state of sushupti, or deep sleep, then even the subtle body becomes quiet. It takes rest. So, both the subtle body and the gross body are inactive. Sometimes we see that even though we have slept for a number of hours, we don't feel fresh when we wake up. Do you know why? Because you have not sufficiently been in the state of sushupti. You have probably been for a long time in the state of swapna. So because the mind has been so much agitated and active, although the physical body has rested, but the mind has not rested. So despite having slept for so many hours, you still wake up feeling very tired. So you can understand that you have been substantially in swapna, in the state of swapna or dreams also. So these are the three states, jagruti, swapna and sushupti. But even in sushupti, can we say that we are unconscious? The state of deep sleep is also like the state of unconsciousness when you are on the operating table. When you are given anesthesia, you are, medically speaking, unconscious. In common language, you call unconscious. But then, you can come back to consciousness. When you are sleeping, you wake up after some time. So, therefore, even though we say that one is unconscious, the fact of the matter is that there is consciousness still in the body. Otherwise, how will the person become conscious again? So deep sleep is something like the coma, condition of coma, comatose condition. It is something like being unconscious with an anesthesia. In coma, you wake up when the effect of the anesthesia wears out. And from deep sleep, you wake up when your sleep is over. Both are very similar conditions. But we can understand that in all these three conditions, even in the state of sushupti, one is still conscious in the sense that consciousness is still there in the body. The Atma is still there in the body. If the Atma leaves the body, if the connection of the Atma is cut with the body, then the person will not wake up. He will go to sleep and not wake up. And that situation is called death. So what is death? Death is simply the departure of the soul from the body in a way that the connection of the soul with the body is permanently cut. This is death. That is all. In modern day science, there is no clear understanding of death also. What exactly happens at death is not clearly known. Modern law defines death as the absence of life. But life is not properly or clearly defined. So how can you define death? You neither know what is life nor what is death. But from the point of view of Bhagavad Gita, we can very clearly explain that death is a departure of the Atma from the body and its permanent disconnection from the body. And what is life? Life is the presence of the Atma. The body is not alive at any time. Even when the soul is present in the body is still dead. We see here the case of an accident. The person has died, but the body is there, which means that the soul has left. If the soul does not leave, then the person will be alive. Sometimes we see that in the person who is about to die, he goes into a stage of coma. He may remain in the state of coma for some hours, some days, some months. Sometimes he may come back from the state of coma to external consciousness, and sometimes he may die. So when he dies, we can understand that the soul's connection with this body has been permanently cut. So now we have understood what is consciousness. Can we switch on the lights, please? What is the source of consciousness? Consciousness does not come from this body. Consciousness does not come from any chemicals or from matter. But consciousness comes from the soul. The soul is spiritual. It is superior to matter. The soul is always alive. It is never destroyed. And when the soul leaves the body, that is called death. So we will have two more sessions tomorrow and day after, in which we will take the subject further. Tomorrow we will talk of evolution of consciousness, and day after tomorrow we will talk about transcendental consciousness. So now we leave the floor open for questions. If anybody has any questions, please raise your hands. And somebody will come with a mic. If anybody has any questions, you may either speak in the mic or you may write down on the sheets of paper that you are being circulated.
Source of the coma.
Yes.
The soul goes away, as you said.
Not necessarily, no.
I have an instance where a person was under coma for nearly 56 days. He was my friend. I have suffered it and lived with him. There was a clot in the brain. And the doctor removed that clot in the brain. But still, he was not conscious and he did not gain the consciousness. What is the question? What is the effect of this clot? What does it do? Does it really remove the soul or the soul remains?
So in a state of coma, usually it indicates that nature is trying to push the soul out of the body, but the soul is struggling to remain inside. Just like if somebody comes to push me out of my house, I will resist. So the soul is resisting, trying to leave the body. And in that condition of fighting, the body is in an intermediate condition. Neither alive nor dead. That is a state of coma. Now, that state has been brought about because of certain injury to the body that can happen in many ways, either by a clot in the brain or for any other reason. If by the repair of that malfunction in the body, if the soul still finds it a condition suitable for living, then the person will come back to consciousness and go on living. But if the condition is not suitable, then the soul will leave the body. So therefore, whether the soul leaves the body or not is something again that will be determined by other factors like that individual's karma and so on. But nevertheless, one thing is clear, that when the soul finally leaves the body permanently, only then death will occur. Otherwise, indefinitely, that person will remain in a condition of coma. Therefore, there are some people who can be sustained in coma for a long period. But till the soul leaves the body, the person actually does not die. Is there any other question? Please raise your hand.
Sir, you told that soul is indestructible. That
yes.
is, it cannot be born or it cannot be like cut into pieces or something.
Yes.
Then we hear that the population of the world is increasing every day. Then when soul cannot be cut into parts, cannot be born new, how can the population increase? Because population generally means that soul is passing from one body to another body.
Yes, this is a question that is asked every time. It's a very common question, and the answer is, as we will see tomorrow, that the soul leaves one body to occupy another body, and there are so many species of life. It is not that the soul upon leaving the body will only become a human being or enter a human body in the next life. So it is not just that the population of humans is increasing. The population of cockroaches and rats is also increasing. Population of mosquitoes is increasing. But population of so many other beings may be decreasing. There may be other species of life whose number is reducing. So therefore, these numbers are not important, because we have knowledge of only a very, very small fraction of the totality of living beings in this universe. So when we see something increase and decreasing, it is like just one small fragment. Imagine that there is a huge godown storing grains in many, many hundreds and thousands of sacks, and you are seeing only one sack, and you are taking out, and your attention is only focused on that one sack. So when a few come there, are reduced, few grains are taken out, it hardly makes a difference in the whole godown. And also you do not know whether any other bags are being added in the godown from the back. So like that, our awareness of the number of living entities in this universe is very, very limited. We are only talking of a few species here. But even we do not know how many living entities are there in this room. Can you say how many living entities are there in this temple room just now? Any estimation? Look around you. There may be about maybe 150 people assembled here. But what about all the microbes and germs in our body? All the bacteria? What about all the flies and mosquitoes and the cockroaches somewhere? What about all the germs in the air? Every cubic centimeter of air has millions of germs. So we do not see what is happening to them. We do not know what is their population, how it goes up and comes down. So therefore, when we see only one population, it is not any indication. But one thing is clear, that when the soul leaves the body, it will take another body. That principle is very clear. So somebody has sent in one question here. The question is, during pregnancy, the body has two souls. How does the consciousness work for mother and fetus? What should be done for perfect consciousness? This is also an important question. During pregnancy, there are two souls, yes. But even otherwise, not two, there are millions of souls in the body. The one soul is you, the person you, who is the owner of this body. But inside your body, many, many others are taking refuge. So many bacteria are there. Some worms may be there. So millions of living beings mean souls. So millions of souls are residing in every living being. So in pregnancy, there's just one extra soul that comes. But that extra soul is a very important soul. Because that soul will develop its full human body gradually, and then emerge from the mother's body. So at that time, it is very important that the mother should practice developing transcendental consciousness, which will be the subject matter of the third day. Because the consciousness of the mother, the state of mind of the mother, the atmosphere and the mother in which the situation in which the mother is will also determine the character and the consciousness of the child that is inside the womb of the mother. So this is the importance of good consciousness for the mother. So this is, of course, also a big topic in itself. So another question is, that is given here, why is ego called the false ego? Very good question. If there is false ego, then logically there must be true ego. So why is this called false ego? Now, what is the meaning of the word ego? Ego means I, sense of I-ness. So that I is true. But when I think that I am the body, that is false. That is Maya. I am not the body. I am the Atma. I am inside the body. Just like if somebody is sitting in a Maruti car, he should not say, I am Maruti. He should say, my name is so and so, and I am in the Maruti car. Similarly, so when the driver thinks that he is the car, that is false ego. When the driver thinks that he is himself, then that is really, he has understood who he is. So similarly, when the soul starts identifying itself with the body, then that is called false ego. That I-ness does not go. That I-ness is a reality. So what is true ego? True ego means I am the soul. I am the Atma. That is true ego. But I am the body, that is false ego. So there is a portion of the subtle body which connects the soul to the body, which covers the soul and which makes the soul think that I am the body. So therefore, that portion of the subtle body is called the false ego. Another question that is said here is, you said that the soul is not destroyed. So does this mean that there are fixed number of souls? Well, the Shastras tell us that there are unlimited number of souls. When there are unlimited number of souls, we cannot really put our arithmetic to it. Even for example, how many souls are there in this assembly now, sitting here? We cannot count actually. Maybe 150 human beings, But if you count all the germs and all the other living entities, it is beyond our counting ability. And then if you count in Tilakwadi, then Belgaum, then Karnataka, then India, then Earth, then you count the whole universe with billions of planets, then you count all the billions of universes, and on and on. So therefore, we are exposed to only a very small fraction of souls. So for us to even think of putting any number to it is not possible. It is inconceivable, the number of souls in the whole creation. Are there any other questions? Okay, some more. Yes, one question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. As you have told that soul is Sachidananda and it is always blissful and it is always happy.
Yes.
Then why do I, when I am the soul, always face this like miseries or distress? Okay, if we identify ourselves with body, then there is misery, we say. And then as the soul is indestructible, in the same way, even the false ego is also there in the subtle body, which is also a part of the subtle body, and which is making us to think that we are the body and all. Then how can we just come to a platform of that I am the soul, just by thinking somewhat like theoretically, how is it possible that we become aloof from the miseries? Because I think that I am being miserable now.
Okay, very good question. If I have understood you correctly, the question is like this. Please sit. The question is that if the soul is full of happiness, the soul is Sachidananda, then why are we sometimes miserable? Good question. And then, what is the meaning of the false ego? In that, why can we only theoretically understand that we are the soul, and how can we really experience that? So the answer to the first question about why are we miserable when actually the soul is full of happiness, the answer is partly given earlier also. That suppose you are a happy young gentleman, but at night you imagine you are being chased by a tiger. At that time you are not happy at all. You are very fearful. You are very miserable, and you are hoping that somehow you can save your life. So how can you become happy in that situation in the dream? Very simple answer. Do you have to kill the tiger? Simply wake up from your dream. Then you will be happy. You are again back to your situation. Isn't it? In other words, the miseries and the so-called pleasures that we are experiencing in the world today are simply like dreams. We are in the state of dream. And when we come to the third day, we will understand what is the meaning of coming out of this dream. So the only solution for the misery is to come out of the dream. So what is the process for coming out of the dream? The first step is to understand that I am dreaming. If we refuse to accept I am dreaming, if we think this is the reality, then the dream will go on. So that is what our scriptures are all about. They are teaching us to come out of this conception of false ego, to come out of this false idea that I am the body. So our shastras say, no, you are not this body, but you are in the body, but you are identifying yourself with the body. So you are imagining dreams of happiness and pain and pleasure in this world. Somebody is thinking, I am a millionaire. Somebody is thinking, I am a pauper. Somebody is thinking, I am a Bengali. Somebody is thinking, I am a Tamilian. Somebody is thinking, I am Indian, I am Russian, I am a human, I am a cat, I am a dog. This is all dream state of consciousness. So we simply have to wake up of this dream by following a certain spiritual process. Then automatically the true nature of the soul, Sachidananda, will be obtained. Okay? another question that is asked is, I do not understand what is Sushupti stage. Actually, not Sunupti, there was a typing error there. It is Sushupti. As I explained, Sushupti is a state of deep sleep when we are not even dreaming. In that state, both the gross body and the subtle body are inactive and only the soul's consciousness is there. It is because the soul is still present that you are able to wake up in the morning after the deep sleep. Next question. When the body gets hurt, why does the soul leave the body? What is the connection? The connection is that when your car has an accident, then immediately you come out to fight with the other person, no? Why did you bang my car? So when the car is injured, temporarily you may come out and sit inside again. But if it is permanently injured, then you can't use the car again. It is not fit for you to drive. So you leave the car for good. And if you have the money, then you will purchase another car. So similarly, when this body becomes unsuitable for the soul to live, then the soul leaves the body. Next question is, if the soul has no end, then why do all the souls in the world not remember the past life? In other words, why does everybody not remember the previous life? This is also an important question. And the answer is very simple also. Do we not have enough problems in this life that you want to remember all the problems of your previous lives? Yes, imagine in this one life there is enough to deal with. Enough identity problems in this one life, enough other miseries in this one life. If you remember everything that you have done and what you were in all your previous lives, imagine what a miserable condition it will be. So the fact that we cannot remember our God, our previous lives, is the mercy of God upon us. He has mercifully given us that loss of memory just so that we can be sane. Otherwise, we would be full of misery. In those particular instances that I quoted, how much suffering those people went through who were remembering their previous life. So that girl, she is not able to figure out, am I this little girl or am I Minu, Minu's mother? Who am I? Imagine the identity crisis that will happen. And imagine if you remember all your previous lives, what kind of psychological problem it is going to be. Seeing one dream once at a time is bad enough. If you see five dreams at the same time. So this is God's mercy upon us, that we have forgotten our previous life. And also it is the nature of this world that we tend to forget. What to speak of the previous life? Can we remember this life also? Can we remember the time when we were in our mother's womb? Can we remember the time when we were 1 month old, 1 year old, 5 years old? Sometimes we forget where we kept the keys 5 minutes ago. So it is not surprising that we have forgotten what we were or where we were in the last life. And the last question, what is the difference between medical unconsciousness and spiritual unconsciousness? Very good question. Medical unconsciousness is nothing but Sushupti. It is another variation of deep sleep. That's all. As far as spiritual unconsciousness, in one sense, the soul can never be without consciousness. The soul is always conscious. But in one sense, you can talk of spiritual unconsciousness by saying that if somebody does not know his or her spiritual nature, that is like spiritual unconsciousness. It is not knowing your own self, not knowing that you are the Atma, that you are the soul. So in that sense, you could talk of spiritual unconsciousness. But literally speaking, the soul can never be unconscious. The soul is always conscious. Consciousness is a property of the soul that can never be separated from it. So thank you very much for all your questions. Oh, many more have come. Okay. But it is getting a little late. So we will keep these questions. And we will answer also tomorrow more, because it is 8:30. And then we have prasadam for all of you. And some of you have to also reach before certain time. So we look forward to having you here tomorrow. Thank you very much for your kind and patient hearing. Hare Krishna.